So we tend to even out over time. Doesn't, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, it absolutely does, because there's only so much money to go around.
That was the 7 district cell phone. All in South County.
Down.
Just there for me. Yeah, I experienced that. So.
And then just to clarify for us, Greg, right now, we have firms that just have to come. It's always something, probably good. I think also, as we've weighed in on this, I think we have to look at the continuity. In other words, if you have viable continuity, it would be a little bit wobbly versus being someone like a Kevin Spiller. Kevin knows our organization very well. He can speak the language, he knows the players, he knows us, top-notch individuals. So that's what you want to think about as we're gathering information. So far, so good.
So, the next question is basically ask you to think about what services, prison services the CFO would provide you if you're licensing software that you all use, if you're leasing buildings for you, is it just sharing personnel, whether it's HR personnel or other administrative personnel. But probably not teachers. Teachers is kind of the one exception. You wouldn't have teachers as a CFO. And the reason is that because of the intensity rules, you need to have an agreement among the schools to share teachers just for compliance reasons. So that's the one component that could not, I think, be in the CFO. Maybe someone will figure out a way to do that, but I haven't figured out how to do that without a problem. So, just as you have today, different kinds of services and folks who provide services, CFO would be part of that central office, function at your central office. With the difference that decision-making would still be at the school member level, so the central office would be making recommendations, providing these sample policies that for the school to adopt or different. So the school boards, the corporate boards are still going to make a lot of decisions at their level.
Yeah. I would add, too, again, just for the time, when we think of our model, think of our staff members, they would be working with that CFO to provide services to our support staff. They're providing services across the province. And also, if we expand, they have a whole, they've got a place that they can go to make sure that things are running smoothly. The schools would continue to run kind of independent later and real time in that term. But it would be cabinet, support staff, and to make sure that we can provide this work.
Again, in terms of the issue of the Brown Act, the reason that's pretty critical is it could be that just the Brown Act applies to this new CFO, but since the definition of a legislative body that triggers the Brown Act is identical with the Public Records Act, if you say, yes, we want the CFO to be subject to the Brown Act, you're also saying it's going to be subject to the Public Records Act. Which is something you might not want to. So, I think that if there's a way to do this that's consistent with your values and the way you want to structure your relationship that has the CFO not be subject to the Brown Act, as knowing that the members have transparency and visibility into the books and records of the CFO, I think that's all you need. I don't think you need this, organization that doesn't meet very often to be subject to Brown Act, but that's a value thing for you, and also will be a little tricky when you go to set it up. I've just given you an example of where I've done this. I represented a statewide pool of healthcare districts that provides basically medical malpractice insurance. We set up a Hawaii risk retention group to ensure the doctors who are private folks. We did that in a careful way so that the risk retention group was not subject to the Brown Act. It was going to meet in Hawaii anyway, under Hawaii law, but some just tell you it can be done. You just have to decide what you want.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was a way to deal with Hawaii, hopefully.
Well, you can do a joint college degree. I mean, Jeff is in college degree. So how do you decide you want to go this way? What would be the next step?
you need to form a new corporation. You have to work out
Article. Sorry, did you want to go to the real one? Do you want to go to the real one?
Okay. One more. Forming a corporation is just like any nonprofit corporation. It's articles and bylaws.
Before we go to this, I have a question on the previous slide.
Yeah.
Regarding to its use for capitalization and other purposes. Use in my mind translates into ongoing annual site dues. Could you have a service fee in order to join the organization?
Yeah.
For new members to do that.
You can have a buy-in.
Yeah.
Okay. Where, you know, just like joining a health club, with an initial buy-in fee, actually dues, annual maintenance fee, you can have that structure. So you can definitely have a buy-in. And the more infrastructure you get, the bigger that buy-in. So you set up the corporation, you design the board, you design how the board can be elected, you transfer assets or personnel to the new corporation, and you set up new service contracts for the CSO to provide the services. So it should be pretty straightforward, even though there's a lot of decision making.
I mean, Craig, what's the question? If we're looking at some option, what would be
Depending on how quickly you can achieve consensus, probably like a July 1 start date, you know, have it coincide with some nice weird cost. Exactly. So it's pretty simple. Otherwise, it's very complicated. So advantages, no charter position, material revision included. And it's long-term and sustainable, I think. Most of the JPAs and companies in the state have long histories of operating. Very few go under. You know, once in a while, you'll see a workers' comp JPA go under. Transparency with members. And a place for the members to get together, at least the members' representatives, at the annual meetings to talk about common issues. The members could always call a meeting. The members, when the members meet, that's not the board's probably of all the members. That's probably a person appointed by the member board to go to and exercise the members' rights. So it would be a place where you can talk about common issues. What you liked and didn't like about what was the CSO. Could provide a very clear path for growth if you want to expand the group. And the CFO being a separate corporation would be responsible for its own system obligation. Would not be the system obligation to help the members. So it limits liability. And I guess that's pretty much it. We've talked about the other points on this slide, but there's a few other questions for us.
Yeah. The last bullet there, board member overlap in 5 existing nonprofits corrected to avoid conflict. Can you elaborate on how that
Yeah, well, I've mentioned already the Brown Act issue, but also, I think it would be, as I've described the way SELPAs and JPAs work, there's not usually governing board members on those umbrella organizations. You can have them, but you need to think that through. You've already got a lot of interrelationships. And so I'm just pointing out that that's something you need to think about. And I would say I don't think that the CSO's board would be a public office. So I'm not worried about that so much. As just the practical issues of the fact that this board will be responsible for coming up with a service contract with the members. But that's one of the key functions of that board. So I'm not saying that you have overlap. You can do much.
So disadvantages. This is not your question here.
No.
I haven't seen one of these in California. But I haven't seen a nonprofit corporation running a charter school before we did it. I think it makes a lot of sense. So that's why I'm bringing it to you. But you may have to explain it to your authorizers, the county boards, others as to what the system is. But I think it's pretty easy to explain when you talk about self-led and GPA. What you don't want to be here, I just say, is you don't want to be a joint housing authority. And the reason is that by statute, there's certain several liability for the activities of the joint housing authority. So you pick up liability. The other thing is joint housing authorities are public agencies for pretty much all purposes. So now you've got into not just the laws that you know about, their transparency laws, but all the laws that apply to public agencies in California. So we do not want this to be a joint housing
authority. He just said, which I thought was very interesting, the proposal that we're hearing about and that you have developed does not exist anywhere right now.
Nobody in California that I know is doing this.
Does this fit under the current law, the current new laws? Yeah.
Yes. Because, so if you think about what it does, it doesn't meet any of the definitions of what a nonprofit, of what a for-profit cannot do. It doesn't do any of it. So even if you assume that doing one of those things would trigger being a charter management organization for 126 purposes, the CSO doesn't do any of those things. I mean, you go back through and that was why I thought this might be successful. So does the CSO control the board? I'm going back to the list of traditional CMO structures. Every 126 was designed to capture. Doesn't control the board of your school. Doesn't employ the school staff. As its own staff. It just provides services. Doesn't necessarily manage day-to-day operations. Now, if you had a contract which had it doing day-to-day operations and making those decisions for your school, for your corporation, you could trigger 126. But it's pretty easy to write a contract, which we've been doing, that just has the CSO providing guidance, advice, support, but not actually making the decision. We have to get to your technical director.
And with your interpretation of the 126 and how this has been structured, can Kurt still be the CSO and over the charters?
Well, you have school principals. I mean, you would identify somebody at the school corporation to be that CEO at the local level. You don't have to do it that way.
You can become school principal.
Yeah.
And we'll be talking about the different people lined against this. I continue to brainstorm. Trying to see that the people on our team, where we can position them, be most effective. And I think the consensus from the program directors is their bandwidth is so limited. A lot of this would just continue. We would continue to run the board meetings. I would be sort of more like an executive coach. I would be doing the day-to-day work of talking to the board of directors, meeting everyone that's here, our authorizing district. We would run the board meetings, we would do all that stuff. Now that's kind of big picture. But it would be something that you talked about saying that they come up with an evaluate the principles.
or the director, it would be the Board of Education or the Board of Trustees and the Board of Directors. At the same time, I would think that if I'm a Board of Director, it's kind of hard for me to miss out because you're not maybe in the know quite as much that I would be that kind of liaison, that coach, to work with that person, shape up skills, and coach them and give you feedback from my position as a, you know, someone's providing services. This is my opinion on how we're doing.
I mentioned that there are some attorneys in the for-profit at Brothers High Schools in California. In their contract, they do have a provision, even with their for-profits, for some input into who the school directors are, because they are involved with the school directors on a day-to-day basis. And so they wanted to make sure that they're not providing services to an organization that they have no influence in.
That is the first item that would need more clarification, because I'm following everything really well how this model could work. But I still, you know, there's three or four options right away right there that I'm concerned with. This one, you know, we like Kurt and what he's doing, and then how does this work? We don't want somebody, you know, it's got to be under the control and it can't be a runaway group coming in both here. So, it's a, you know, I mean, that's the management part of it. And still, it isn't defined right enough where I really have a picture of it. Oh, I'm sorry. There you go.
Members will have an executive board, who will have some confidence in that board, and so it is election for that board by the members. So you're going to have, there's going to be a feedback loop that is going to keep communication going, I think, the way this is going to work. So I don't think the CSO has any chance of running away from the members. The members can always say, hey, we got a board that's not completely legislative. We're going to choose the board member so we can get the change. I think in practice it's going to work, but you will have to decide that.
All right. It's a pretty minor thing, but I was just curious. I know a couple of issues with the public charter school board or board stipends in light of recent legislation and activity. How would board stipends or could they work under the CSO? Are there all or the same rules would apply?
Well, again, the governance of the corporations that are the members, unaffected. Whatever they're doing today, they can do that, they can still do that. As far as the CSO, the board of the CSO is a nonprofit corporation. It's living the same rules as any nonprofit corporation in California. It's not a charter school, but there are no compensation restrictions on charter school nonprofit boards that are independent of the corporation code. So the rules would all be the same. But this group could decide that you're not going to compensate CSO board members. You put that in the articles and bylaws, or you're going to put some limitation on it. So again, this group will have control over whether that happens or not.
But potentially, conversely, with the CSO board not to do stipends, but the charter school board
could do that. Well, but the I mean, obviously, the CSO could not dictate that to the members.
No, if the members would have this,
yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm. And so, back to your point, another scenario we looked at. Say, if I wasn't, if we just talk it through, I wasn't selected to be the CEO of the CSO, and I would remain with the other nonprofit, then cabinet members and support staff would have another boss. And then you look at a salary of someone that can actually, it gets a little bit wobbly. So there was a lot of back and forth on there. And a couple of you were like, oh, I'm not quite sure. Thanks for volunteering. And I was a little bit offended.
It's the same rules as every nonprofit. So normally there are at least three. But if you want to have 42, you could have 42.
Okay.
41 or 43. Yeah. Well, remember that's the first time I told you about this. They had a 57-member board. And not only that, but the rules for that board were they had to operate by consensus. At some point, like 5 years down the road, they cut them down to 27 members. Which I think they really today still is pretty good. But I couldn't get them down below that. So can you do it? Yeah. I mean, it'll be a huge idea. Now, the other thing you can do, though, is you've got a 27 board. The nonprofit rules let you set the quorum in the first. So it's not necessarily 50%.
But you also wouldn't want to trigger quorum for one of the members of the board. So you wouldn't want to have a majority of one of the school boards.
This is all brainstorming, but I'm trying to envision, because instead of having 5 members, where each charter school nonprofit appointed 1 member, what if each charter school appointed 3 members and you had 16 or something board members, and you have to do it in a way that didn't create a quorum or conflict, but that might give us more options for how to create that board.
Sure.
Well, if I think about the insurance JP, you know, Charter State has 300 members, but they only have 11 board members.
So that's kind of the overview of working hard option 1, of creating a CSO.
I think the discussion of the other 2 options will be quicker. So the concept of taking the 5 corporations and putting into 1 corporation, that's pretty simple. It would be administratively simple. You guys have 1 board meeting, not the serial master board meeting. You still have centralized services. You still have essentially all the staff you currently have. It provides full transparency because now the 1 organization will have accounts for the schools as you do today, but every authorizer will be able to look at every dollar that is going through the organization. It's a very familiar structure because a lot of folks with FIRE, for example, have long had a single corporation model. It's easy to share resources, including teachers. If you've got 1 employer, there's no new corporation, so it is, from that standpoint, simple. So what are the disadvantages? Well, it requires material revisions for every charter. So every authorizer is going to have to do that for every charter that you have. It increases the risk of cross-school liabilities. So if you have some expensive problem, HR problem, liability problem in school, it's 1 corporation, so all of its assets are available. Satisfy the liabilities of any of the schools that are in there. That's just basic sort of corporate fund. You gotta go through the attorney general. It's not a big deal, but whenever you dissolve a nonprofit corporation, the California Attorney General supervises the charitable organization, so we have to put together a package of materials to show the California that assets that were collected for charitable purposes will continue to be used for the patient of the month. Never had an appointment, Attorney General pay, try to block the deal. They actually don't have the right to block it like they do for healthcare districts or hospital districts. But it's just an extra cost. Usually it takes 30 days. It's not a big deal, but yeah, it's true. Your authorizers might say, hey, I used to have a board that was responsive to my district. Do my district, and now you've got 1 central board far away. They might not like that. The authorizers could all seek board seats, right? Every authorizer has the right to have a representative on the board, and
now you've got five authorizers who could all appoint board members to your big board, your single big board. Due diligence, not a big deal, probably. You all know probably what each of the schools is doing, but in this process, all the liabilities get exposed so the corporation doesn't inherit liabilities from another corporation that didn't know about. So kind of all the dirty laundry comes out. And then we're not 100% sure of this, but you probably would be calling CSRS because CSRS requires everybody who's eligible, who's employed by the employers, to be in CSRS. So you probably, those that are not in CSRS probably end up in CSRS. It's really hard to go the other direction.
That's
it.
Yeah.
What's that? Well, it's easy to get in, it's hard to get out. CSRS is not going to send notes to someone who wants to cut out. They are talking about trying to get out, but that was maybe before Carl showed up. Yeah, that's why I'm not giving you a definitive answer. You might be able to fight about that, but that is not. So that's the, yes.
The increased risk of liability jumps out from one school could impact the other. Is there a way to counterbalance that with increased insurance? Or is it something you can do with that?
Well, it's a fact. Obviously, you can buy more insurance. You can do the risk management. But you can't economically isolate one school from another because there's no corporate boundary. No corporate wall. And then people are actually like, from my perspective, if I don't know if you're in the county, but if someone's in the county, they work, well, our revenue is not $1 million. So that's a good thing. If I get a word on the 56th earnings, the thing is, if you go out to the mass, you don't have to work hard. You can go back to the 56th earnings, you get a little capital versus, you know, you don't have to come off the day. Let's go for it all. We're going to take half of it. We're going to come off the startup by this time. Yeah, I mean, I guess the other thing on the flip side, if you were in a paper union organizing activity, they'd have to organize the whole, a majority of the whole thing. Whereas right now, they could go school by school. That's a lot easier. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's option two. It sounds straightforward and streamlined, but when you get into the details, there are a lot of real issues. And this July 1 might not be feasible from now. It's a multi-step process. We might be able to do it, but it would be a push. So the third option is basically to take your existing structure and not create anything new, but refine it. And there are a lot of ways you might refine it. For example, you might want to decide that you have one host corporation for all of the shared staff and service. You know, we know, we work with a charter school up in Northern California that is the host for essentially a special ed operation for, I think, a dozen different charter schools and school districts. Indemnity agreement between the host charter school and the membership. And it is known as a joint powers authority. But you could do that. I mean, you could say we're going to pick one school to be the host of all the staff and then have more similar contracts among the
different. I mean, I'm done with the payroll
for the hard and but I don't know if you want to go through these.
I know one of the disadvantages is that I other question related to the liability. The liability is combined into a single corporation. How about under this option three, from a legal perspective, having everything kind of shared back and forth, does that pierce the corporate veil or increase the liability of each corporation for something that the other corporation did that wouldn't be there in the CFO structure, or how does that work?
Answer is yes. So there's some things which you can control pretty well, like workers' comp liability, labor code section 3602 says you can make sure that if you got a shared employee, who's got the responsibility for workers' comp. But other kinds of liabilities, say you have an employee who is just engaging in misconduct, who is being shared, there's a path of liability that's the borrowing corporation and lending corporation. So yeah. Well, you certainly pinpoint where the insurance coverage is going to be. Whereas if it's a shared employee, there's a little less control over kind of the scope of services of that employee. You have sort of more informal borrowing that goes on versus a contractual relationship. So it wouldn't be very different, but it would be easier from a legal standpoint to actually write in, you know, create indemnities and have scope of services that are followed. I'm not sure there's a huge difference in the end. You know, we had a sickness with an unfair event. The advantages, you know, having a significant change, you don't have to get material revisions. You don't have to figure out who the board looks like. Disadvantages, it's hard to explain. It's a little bit more consistent potentially, and it's harder for the authorizers to explain and understand. So those are the things we see as difficult. I think also growth is a little bit harder to figure out how you would grow from your current structure. There isn't a clear path for somebody to join you without necessarily remaking your structure. So this is why we look at kind of different options for you. The traditional option, obviously, is we haven't proposed that. We don't think that has any advantages for you. We think the CFO structure makes a lot of sense and provides a lot of consistency, but you're going to be inventing it because you have to figure out what works for you.
One-on-one, you need someone right next to someone walking on the office, but it's no secret. Every single executive director can get in this office to have that cheat sheet, either on their computer or nearby when you start a conversation, because it could be a bank account, it could be anything. If you look at that document, you're going to miss that. I mean, we have to use that. That's what's really tough. The other thing is when I'm trying to explain it to a superintendent, he can explain this or she can explain it to the board. They wouldn't get it. Mm-hmm. If that's failing, if that, what if you kind of,
why are you hesitation?
How does that actually work? I've never seen things. You're telling me this, and then you do this, then you do that, and you'll go back there, and then everything works out at the end of the year. But we're not in that world anymore. I think we need to be very sensitive and very intuitive at the signs of the transparency of where we are, to clearly articulate in 30 seconds or less who we are and how we operate. I'm thinking even, we talked recently, just for board members, to give you a quick start card. If you met someone and said, hey, I work for the cloud, what's your cloud? It's a job search. We're trying to explain to people what we are. We're good people, but it's hard to explain where you actually get it, but I can approach the other hand and you're gonna hit it. So as we look at it, this kind of in the status quo, that would be my concern. And I think in a matter of time, people are gonna question us more and more. I mean, I think we operate well, we're ethical, we're honest, we have integrity, but we've got some options. Did we miss anything on that?
Did we
100%?
Yeah. Isn't that option, TSO option, clarifications for how the CEO, like you, would work? Because if everybody likes you're working, we always want you to work more. You're doing a great job. But also, we have been told because of 126, and it's not mentioned, I didn't think, in the TSO, but it is, if we say this way, the overlapping board members. So is that, because it's mentioned if we remain the same, we should work on it, but I didn't see that in the CSO that we had overlapping, and that should be taken care of because of 126. But it is, that's something we need to still work on.
I'm comment something on what we know. I think we still have to get more information with the staff decision today.
Yeah,
I think the next staff decision today would be coming up with that one.
I'm asking is more information. I'm not asking for decisions. I'm just saying, but, as we've read through the options, your advisement, as I've heard, remaining the same is not the best option for. I'm trying to draw that point out now. If we had this part, I'd like to draw out. You have to continue going to authorizers, and our situation to explain is hard. And we're into the world now that we're talking about more. Everything is clear and it's out there in the open. Okay. And so, how would be if we just went around, we start what do you think? What and just if we got some views out of just walking around the table here and hear it.
Well, I didn't know. I will be letting our authorizing where we are. If we're not sitting still, we're still moving in the right direction. But we're moving cautiously. And I think that's what our organization is all about. We're never going to stop. We're going to continue to move forward. Mm-hmm. We're going to do it in an appropriate way. So they're going to be fine.
And Davis, aren't we ahead of the curve here? We're trying to do something. We hear there's not a blueprint for one client. You told us they've got a law, but they really haven't massaged it yet. But
is our group ahead of the curve on something you believe that would stand?
In terms of this proposed structure, I think we're ahead of the curve. I think the legislature never, and people in the legislature never conceived of this model, which is why I think it worked. Because even if you run, you know, so with the only exception being the Brown Act, that'll be the trickiest part of the structure. But we've done that before, and I think there's good ways of making sure that it doesn't apply. It doesn't mean you're not going to make a legislative reaction to apply it, because you certainly can bring a lot of the way to apply it. But with that one area, which I think we can handle, I think the structure works very well. And even if you had to comply with all transparency laws, I think it still works well. As far as the common directors, the thing that you can control how that issue rolls out, if you have to deal with that, but reality may intervene. So we just